Hey everyone, welcome again to Revelations. This is a bit of a special podcast in the fact that this is officially my 51st podcast. And having reached the 50 mark without even realizing it, I just want to thank God for giving me the opportunity to be doing this and the opportunity to serve Him even in this minuscule way. And I want to thank everyone out there listening. I want to thank everyone that's joined Faith Speak and that's contributing on there. You know, you guys, whether you realize it or not, I've said it before, I am so blessed to have you. And I thank God every day that I have this opportunity, if not just to talk to you, but to interact with you and to share my walk with God with you, and to have you guys sharing what your relationship with God is like and your world views and things back with me. All right, the subject of this podcast is going to be my interpretation, my answer to a question asked in another podcast. I know several of you out there are familiar with Chris White and his Nowhere to Run podcast, and I've mentioned it before. Chris is a member over on FaithSpeak, and I've had several opportunities to email him back and forth and to talk to him a little bit about stuff. And he's a cool guy, and his show's great. And in his last episode, he asked a question, or rather presented a question that he then went on to discuss and mentioned that he would like some help researching this stuff. So I spent the weekend looking into it so that I could come back with what I thought was just going to be a little post on Salvation Revelation about it and give him some reference material and stuff. But I ended up writing and writing and writing what's turned out to be over 12 pages so far. So eventually I'll get that up. But I wanted to just take some of the information that I've come across and my own personal perspective on this question and share it with you guys. So I'm going to now play for you a little clip from Chris's Nowhere to Run show, and that should set things up for me to begin presenting this material to you guys.
Okay, let's begin. I know this is just going to be a series of just ranting here, and I don't feel like I know enough to really go in deep as I'd like to on this. And so I'm really counting on you guys, and I'm going to try to provide you with as much research information through the show notes section and other places that you can follow this and help me if you're really interested. If you're on the same page as this and you can help do the research here, I think this is all too important. And in essence, it's the unification theory of a lot of different conspiracies and how they all tie together, including MK-Ultra type mind control experiments, including electromagnetic frequency government projects, extremely low frequency stuff, how the stuff that they did as far as, all the LSD and psychic and parapsychological research the government does, remote viewing and so on, and all the connections that they have. In addition, how that ties into alien abductions, including sleep paralysis as a real phenomena, the Nephilim and the New World Order, spiritual warfare, and satanic ritual abuse, and other types of things going on like that.
Now, I kind of clipped Chris off there. He goes on to explain that his hypothesis is that this is all about spiritual authority, whether or not you've been dedicated to God or in some way dedicated to what he calls the dark side or satanic powers or whatever you want to call it. Now, I agree with Chris 110%. I think this is all about satanic power, satanic entities, and the powers that be trying to use them against us. This new age, this new world order is all about the occult, and you don't have to look far to find it. So I want to start off by reading to you Ephesians 6:10-18. Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Put on the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. Wherefore, take unto you the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand. Stand, therefore, having your loins girt about with the truth, and having the breastplate of righteousness, and your feet shod with the preparation of the gospel of peace. Above all, take the shield of faith, wherewith ye shall be able to quench all the fiery darts of the wicked, and take the helmet of salvation, and the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God, praying always with all prayer and supplication in the Spirit, and watching thereunto with all perseverance and supplication for all saints. So we're being told it's our responsibility to put on this full armor of God and to be prepared for satanic attack. And that's what this comes down to. This is an attack, a spiritual attack, pure full-on spiritual warfare between us as representatives of God and Jesus here on earth and the demonic forces that rule this world. And they sit in high places. And I'm not just talking about trees and clouds. These are high political offices. These are high positions of power within churches. These evil forces, these evil entities, are calling the shots. And their plan and their goal is to usher in the new world order, the new age, this basically Satan's reign on earth. So I believe that the unifying theory that Chris has set forward as far as this being a spiritual battle and this being about dominion and authority is absolutely correct. And I believe that the powers that be are using all of these so-called conspiracies to prepare the world for what's coming. And they're ushering in demonic entities. And I believe their goal is for indwelling of these demonic forces within anyone that's not prepared, that's not wearing the full armor of God, that's not saved by the blood of Jesus Christ. So I'm going to try to address each of the points that Chris made in his statement, and they won't be in the same order, but I'll try to keep this as tidy as I can and tie it all together as best as I can. And for my regular listeners, there's going to be a slight overlap with some of this material from stuff that's been already talked about in other podcasts. But I think by the end of this show, you'll understand more. I've learned a great deal more while researching this stuff, and I think that it really begins to tighten up the puzzle even more. You really get more focus on what's going on here when you take the things that we've discussed and some things that I haven't discussed before, and you compile that information and you look at it as a whole. So I will now begin doing that. So I'll start with the beginning of the New Age movement. The New Age movement more or less began with Madame Helena Blavatsky. Blavatsky went around the world. She traveled all over. She claimed to be contacted by a master. She went to Tibet, and she talked to all these different masters and all this stuff. They gave her the wisdom that she needed in order to channel this divine master that dictated tons of books for her. This was automatic writing. I see no difference between this and demon possession. I mean, she's taking in a spirit, and the spirit is controlling her hand and writing page after page after page of this information. So, a couple of quotes from Madame Blavatsky. We say and maintain that sound, for one thing, is a tremendous occult power, that it is a stupendous force when directed with the occult knowledge. Sound may be produced of such a nature that the pyramid of Cheops would be raised in the air, or that a dying man, nay, one at his last breath, would be revived and filled with new energy and vigor. And she also stated, and now it stands proven that Satan, or the red fiery dragon, the lord of Phosphorus, and Lucifer, or Lightbringer, is in us. It is our mind, our tempter, and our Redeemer, our intelligent liberator and savior from pure animalism. So Blavatsky went on to start the Theosophical Society. In 1915, another woman named Alice Bailey discovered the Theosophical Society. Bailey, I might add, was a Christian, and her husband, I believe, was a minister. However, in 1915, she came across the Theosophical Society. She had already had some kind of a vision of what she thought was Jesus. But she's quoted as saying the following. "The first time that I went into the shrine room," this was at the Theosophical Society, "I saw the customary pictures of the Christ and the Masters of the Wisdom, as the Theosophists call them. To my surprise, there, looking straight at me, was a picture of my visitor. There was no mistake. This was the man who had walked into my aunt's drawing room, and it was not the Master Jesus." So clearly, as a Christian, this demonic entity came to her, disguised as Jesus, led her to believe it was Jesus. And by the time she realized it wasn't Jesus, she was so consumed with it, she didn't care anymore. It lied to her, it tricked her, didn't matter. Because clearly she wasn't wearing the full armor of God. She was unprepared for this flaming dart that she got shot with. So like Blavatsky, Bailey spends a long time channeling this spirit, indwelling this spirit, allowing it to work through her and to write through her through automatic writing. So this thing's name was Master Dejoie Cool. And she published 24 books dealing with writings, handed, dictated, whatever, to her by Dejoie Cool. And they included ancient wisdom, philosophy, religion, science, astrology, healing, and more. So she writes, "The methods of overshadowing will largely be the ones used by the great Lord and his masters at the end of the century." Now, this was 1915, so you're looking at the end of the 1900s. "And for this reason, they are sending into incarnation in every country disciples who have the opportunity offered them to respond to the need of training men and women to recognize the higher psychism and the true inspiration and mediumship, and to do this scientifically. In 50 years' time, the need for true psychics and conscious mediums will be very great if the Master's plans are to be carried through to fruition, and the movement must be set on foot in preparation for the coming of him for whom all nations wait." So who do you think him could possibly be? It's not Jesus. It's not Buddha. It's not the Mahdi. Although him will attempt to fulfill all of those roles. But it's important to study what these people were initially writing about. They weren't just writing these nonsensical, like, oh yeah, we need the crystals, we need this, and we're just going to chant. And no, there's a very, very devious plan in motion here. And it's being conducted by these quote-unquote masters of wisdom. And these masters, of course, are just so powerful, they're so masterful, that they need to find Alice Bailey and Madame Blavatsky to work through, because they have no other way of manifesting themselves. So they possess these people and use them for their agenda. But I want to note here, Blavatsky talks about sound being used for the occult with occult knowledge as an all-powerful type thing. And I want to mention Bailey talking about the use of science in this plan, because these will become important later on. Also, Bailey mentions the need for psychics some 50 years in the future, which would have placed it right around the 1960s. And of course, she's talking about the coming of him at the end of the century. And if you do very little research into the New World Order, you'll find that they wanted to have the New World Order in place by the year 2000. They wanted to have for the dawning in of the year 2000, they wanted to have that golden capstone placed on the Great Pyramid. But it couldn't happen. They weren't allowed to do it. All right, that should be enough background on the formation of the New Age. The New Age movement the beginning seeds of the New World Order. I'm now going to move on to another key player, Aleister Crowley. So Crowley believed that he was ushering in the Aeon of Horus. And remember, that sound energy that Blavatsky talked about was talked about in the context of constructing a pyramid, like the Pyramid of Cheops. So Crowley's Aeon of Horus, or Age of Horus, or New Age, or New World Order, however you want to look at it, would be one free, completely rid of Christianity. Crowley loathed Christians, as did Blavatsky. Absolutely despised everything Christianity stood for. So Crowley was a drug addict. He was a hardcore occultist. He liked to be called the Beast. He described himself using the number 666. Anyway, in 1903, Crowley married Rose Kelly. The two went to Egypt on their honeymoon. They shared their first night of wedded bliss in the King's Chamber of the Great Pyramid of Giza. They returned to Cairo in 1904, the following year. Rose began to enter trance-like states, or demonic possession. She insisted that the god Horus was trying to contact Crowley. In April of 1904, Crowley finally gave in and followed her instructions and entered into mystical communications with Horus under the pseudonym Iwas, who dictated the Book of the Law to Crowley. So now we've got three occultists, New Agers, that are hell-bent on bringing forth this New Age using channeling, using automatic writing, allowing themselves to become demon-possessed in order to obtain information, vital information, that would bring forth this New Age, this New World Order. So Crowley's main quote, the thing that you hear most from Aleister Crowley is, "Do what thou willst shall be the whole of the law." In other words, do whatever you want. That's the only law. Whatever you feel like doing, do it. Which again, you know, really important stuff. These things have to communicate from the netherworld or wherever they are in order to let everyone know, hey, just do what you want. That's the only law you have. Do whatever you want. But as I discussed in the Aleister Crowley podcast, this ridiculous law or non-law carried forth, and it had legs, and all throughout the 60s, you saw it really completely take hold of an entire generation of youth. The whole rebellion, the free love, the use of drugs, and you had bands like the Beatles and the Doors and everyone else preaching Crowley's message, openly quoting from Crowley. And the kids didn't know where they were getting this from. They just thought John Lennon was saying it. They didn't know this was occult information handed to Aleister Crowley from the Egyptian deity Horus. Anyway, Crowley was involved in all kinds of depraved, sick stuff. Five mistresses that he had wound up killing themselves. They were all on all kinds of drugs. They partook in just the most depraved sexual act. At one point, he had his one mistress, Leia Hirisk, partake in ritualistic sex with a goat, which Crowley then sacrificed while it was doing what it was doing. These people were unstable at best, demon-possessed at worst. And I absolutely believe the reason these people were killing themselves is because they opened themselves up to demon possession by taking part in these ritualistic acts. And I think what you've got here are the seeds of what later became MKUltra, Monarch, and all of these different mind control agencies within the CIA. Britain had them, Russia had them, but it always involves these depraved sexual rituals where people cope with these terrible things by creating an alternate personality. They have one stable personality that is their essence, the person that they were. And then they create an alternate or an alter that is the personality that is actively involved in these terrible ritualistic acts, because that's the only way the human mind can cope with them. And you had Crowley dealing it with the drugs and everything else. I mean, it was all the stuff that I believe laid the seeds for MKUltra later on. And I want to read to you now a quote from Aleister Crowley about having multiple personalities. By some device, such as changing of thy ring from one finger to another, create in thyself two personalities, the thoughts of one being within entirely different limits from that of the other, the common ground being the necessities of life. Again, these alternate personalities. It's like, look at it like a hard drive on your computer, all right? And you create a new folder. There's a whole nother folder that can contain all kinds of information that the initial personality knows absolutely nothing about. And by creating that personality that is in tune with all of these demonically influenced satanic rituals, you're opening that mind up for direct demonic possession. And I believe that's what all of this is about. This is all spiritual warfare, and these evil powers, these evil demons that were so willing to jump from a human being into a pig to escape wherever it was that they would be forced to go back to, they want in. They want in, and they want in humans in the worst way. And these people that serve them, whether they know it, whether they care, whether it gives them power to bring these demons forward, I have no idea, and I don't really care. All I know is that they're serving evil, dark powers. They're serving Satan, Lucifer, whatever name you want to attribute it to. They're serving the devil. They're doing his bidding, and his bidding and his age all revolve around these spirits being loosed from where they're being held and set forth into whatever you want to call this, our plane of humanity. So Crowley went on, and he performed another one of his rituals where he was trying to summon forth the ancient deity, the god of Babylon. Instead of getting this deity, he got this thing called Lamb. He used Enochian magic to bring this thing out, to open a portal and bring Lamb out into a realm where they could communicate. Lamb is, it's a gray alien. It's obviously a gray alien. You have to see the sketches of this. I'll put them up on Salvation Revelation as soon as I have a chance. I'll put it all on FaithSpeak as well, so you can just go to the Salvation Revelation group and click on this podcast, and you'll see the picture. I mean, it's a gray alien. There's no doubt about it. And just coincidentally, Crowley dies in 1947. The same year as the Roswell incident in New Mexico. So to some degree, you almost have to ask yourself if this ritual that Crowley did with this Enochian magic and these ancient spells, did he open a gate for these UFO things to start entering into our world? I mean, there really wasn't too many problems with them before, and all of a sudden now they're crash landing? And if you have a problem or some kind of a hang-up with UFOs, I completely understand, because there was a long time where I absolutely didn't believe that there was any chance of aliens, because I just didn't think that God would create life on other planets. And that was just my viewpoint. But after rereading a lot of verses in the Bible and studying up on the Nephilim and looking at these links and different words in the Bible and descriptions of flaming chariots and things in the Bible, you have to wonder. And this is something that my viewpoint on has changed completely 180 degrees. I now absolutely believe that there are, I don't want to call them extraterrestrial, I prefer to call them interdimensional beings flying these UFOs, like Chris White talks about in his podcast. They made deals. They came here and they set up shop and they dealt with the highest echelon of the American government, and they exchanged technology with our leaders so that they could have the spiritual authority to grab us and experiment on us. And over and over and over again, you hear and read examples of people that have been messed with by these interdimensional entities known as aliens or ETs. They prey, and they pray with the authority given to them by Jesus Christ, and in the name of Jesus Christ, they tell these things to be gone, and they are gone. They leave. And an excellent example of this is Tom Horn. And for those of you that don't know who Tom Horn is, he runs Raiders News Network. And I'll try to find some audio of Tom talking about this. But apparently this happened to his sister when they were kids. And every time they prayed, the things stopped coming back. But then they'd come back again after a while, and they'd pray again, and they'd go away. And for those of you that wonder, well, why would these demons need to come here and experiment on us? Number one, to trick us into thinking that there's something out there besides God that created us, and that's why I have such a problem with the term intelligent design. But number two, and I'm not sure where I heard this, it may have been Chuck Misler, but the idea that human DNA has changed throughout time, and in Genesis 6, we're given the story where these angels came down from heaven, came down from the sky, and bred with human women, these demonic angels. I don't want to say angels. These are demons. These are fallen angels. They come here. They take themselves wives of whoever they want. They take as their wife. And they give birth to these demonic offspring known as the Nephilim. So if our DNA has changed since then, and if there was any technology involved in this interbreeding between these demons and humans, or if maybe our DNA has changed to the point where their seed no longer can develop into a giant Nephilim, or perhaps they want to make these things look human. I have no idea, but there are a billion different ways you can look at this and a billion different reasons why these demons might be experimenting on us. I absolutely believe that when they just show up where there are hundreds of people, it's just to cause them to shake and lose faith in God. All right, let me get back on topic here. I want you to remember from Aleister Crowley, the ritual sex, the automatic writing again, the demon possession. I want you to remember the multiple personalities. I want you to remember him bringing forth a spirit that looked like a gray alien. And I want you to remember that he spent the first night that he was wedded to his first wife doing whatever they were doing inside the king's chamber at the Giza Pyramid. So now we're going to get into a guy named Jack Parsons. Parsons was a follower of Crowley, and we'll get into that more in a minute. He created stable rocket fuel for America. He was a rocket propulsion researcher at the California Institute of Technology and wound up being the co-founder of Jet Propulsion Laboratory, or JPL. JPL went on to create lunar landers for the moon, the Mars landers, and Voyager 1 and 2. He developed stable jet fuel. Without Parsons, we never would have had rockets going up into space. We didn't have stable enough fuel that it could continue to fire and burn up as it left the atmosphere. We didn't have fuel that wouldn't ignite once it, you know, went through turbulence leaving the atmosphere. Parsons solved that problem. Now, Parsons was a devout follower of Crowley. He partook in everything he could that dealt with Crowley and Crowley's teachings. Before rockets went up, he was known to invoke Pan. And Pan is a pagan deity that is often attributed with Satan, attributed to Satan. It's that half-man, half-goat-looking thing. So Crowley picked Parsons to head the OTO. The OTO was the Ordo Templi Orientis, and that was the Thelemic Order. That was Crowley's religion. It was the Thelema religion. So Parsons is in charge of this, and his good friend L. Ron Hubbard was like his right-hand man. And L. Ron Hubbard went on to start Scientology. L. Ron Hubbard stole a bunch of money from Parsons, along with Parsons' wife or girlfriend, depending on what report you read. But he took that stuff, he took the money, took the girl, took off, and started Scientology, which is based on the teachings of Crowley. And, of course, deals with space aliens and science fiction type stuff. So now you've got Crowley invoking Lam, this gray alien. You've got JPL, the Jet Propulsion Labs, coming into being, launching rockets, American rockets being launched only, solely, by the help of Mr. Parsons, who's running Crowley's Satanic Order. And, again, we're dealing with someone that wanted to launch himself into space. In the end, he blew himself up, supposedly. He was in his lab, and they found him blowed up. So I just happened to be browsing on the NASA website, and I looked up Parsons, and I found a story from October 25th, 2006. And I just want to read you a little bit of this. 70 years ago, this Halloween, at 9 a.m., a truck from the California Institute of Technology turned onto a road owned by the Pasadena Water Department, and after heading down a small hill, came to a stop. Its tired occupants, they had spent the night before preparing and had only 3 hours of sleep, clamored out and began the laborious job of carrying out their cumbersome test equipment another 400 yards into the dirt and scaffy brush of Pasadena's Arroyo Seco. They were there in an isolated, dry, scrub-strewn gulch tree 3 miles north of the Rose Bowl to scientifically measure the thrust developed by one of the world's first liquid-fueled rocket motors. They were there to accurately calculate the efficiency of the motor. They were there because they most likely would not kill anyone except perhaps themselves. They were Frank Molina, Jack Parsons, Ed Foreman, A.O. Smith, William Boley, Carlos Wood, and William Rockefeller. Now I hope everyone out there that hasn't already listened to the podcast about the Federal Reserve and the Rockefellers will do so. I find it very alarming that there was a Rockefeller involved in this. And from what I've just read, the Rockefellers are all over NASA. And just to make a long story short, the Rockefellers are very much behind the drive to insert microchips into you. So now we've got the head of Crowley's Order running the show here for JPL. We've got Crowley, who conjured up a demon that looks just like a gray alien. We've got involvement, direct involvement, by a Rockefeller. And if you need any more damning evidence, these guys chose to launch this test on Halloween. And remember, after World War II, we brought over all the Nazi rocket scientists and mind control scientists. So you've got a Satanist working with a Rockefeller, and they're in direct dealings with these Nazi scientists. And we all know that the Nazis were developing UFOs. I mean, there's video of these things. And I think it's pretty well known that the Nazis were directly involved in the occult. Now, I'm going to move on now. I'm going to talk a little bit about UFOs. I don't want to get too heavy into it, but when you're dealing with these UFO experiences, when people sight these things, more often than not, they hear a noise. I mean, if these are low-flying, they hear a noise. They hear a frequency shift. Normally, it's a very low, low frequency when these things are stationary and completely visible. As they come into view, they shift down from a high frequency to a low frequency, and as they go away, they go from a low frequency to a super high frequency. So here's an example of a sighting of a UFO that took place on October 31st of 1993. A meteorological officer at RAF Shawbury in the UK sighted a UFO and described this low frequency phenomena. He saw a UFO fire a narrow beam of light at the ground and saw the light sweeping backwards and forwards across the field beyond the perimeter fence, as if it were looking for something. He heard an unpleasant, low-frequency humming sound coming from the craft, and said he could feel it as well as hear it, rather like standing in front of a bass speaker. Now this is what I want you to remember. I want you to remember Jack Parsons, the follower of Crowley, the occultist that conjured up Pan. whenever they launched a rocket, I want you to remember the Rockefeller. I want you to remember the low frequency sound of this UFO. And if you look into the UFO the sightings and whatnot, you'll find tons and tons and tons of accounts of people claiming that they heard low frequency rumblings involved with these alien craft. And I want you to remember Blavatsky talking about sound used along with occult knowledge being powerful enough to lift blocks and build a pyramid. And I'll get into all that in a little bit. Now I'm going to talk to you about a guy named Vic Tandy. If anyone is older, you remember the old Tandy computers that they sold at Radio Shack. This is the same guy. One night, Vic Tandy, an engineer and expert in computer-assisted learning, was working late in his lab. Out of the blue, Tandy became uneasy and felt as though something was not right. I was sweating but cold, and the feeling of depression was noticeable. But there was also something else. It was as though something was in the room with me. Then I became aware that I was being watched, and a figure slowly emerged to my left. It was indistinct and on the periphery of my vision, but it moved just as I would expect a person to. It was gray and made no sound. The hair was standing up on the back of my neck. I was terrified. So Tandy turns and looks at this thing, and it disappears. And then he had a series of other strange occurrences in this lab. And so Tandy's a scientist, and he's not willing to think that there could possibly be some kind of a gray spirit or ghost manifesting itself in his lab. His first thoughts were that low-frequency sound waves were causing him to hallucinate this. So he set out to find out if that was the case. Tandy found a standing wave acoustically stuck inside the walls of the lab, an infrasound wave vibrating at about 19 cycles per second. The sound waves, which just happened to hit top intensity at the right side behind Tandy's desk, were being generated by a recently installed extraction fan. So once he altered the mounting of the fan, all the strange occurrences went away. Tandy also investigated other haunted sites, two of which he also attributes infrasound or low-frequency sound waves to the presumption of the presence of ghosts. So when you look into this further, you find that guys like Thomas Edison met with Blavatsky and was trying to build a machine to communicate with the dead that used electromagnetic technology because he believed spirits lived in the electromagnetic realm. So now you've got Tandy coming out and saying, oh, yeah, these ultra-low sound waves, these frequencies, just give you the feeling or make you hallucinate a spirit. Why not a toaster? Why not an elephant? Why a spirit? Why a gray spirit? And just by chance, these same low frequencies occur when the UFOs manifest themselves. So some of you probably know where I'm going to go with this, but for those of you that don't, I'm going to have to give you a little bit of background on MK Ultra, and then I'll explain to you how we are now being bombarded with low frequency and ultra low frequency and extremely low frequency waveforms. All right, MK Ultra. MK Ultra was a CIA code name for a mind control program. It started sometime around 1950, and it came into public view during what has become known as the Rockefeller Commission. The commission was created in response to a December 1974 report in the New York Times that the CIA had conducted illegal domestic activities, including experiments on U.S. citizens during the 60s. The commission issued a single report in 1975 touching upon certain CIA abuses, including mail opening and surveillance of domestic dissident groups. It publicized Project MKUltra and a CIA mind control study, MK being mind control. They also went into the Kennedy assassination and a bunch of other things. But MKUltra and Monarch were two mind control programs. MKUltra appears to have used a lot more drugs than Monarch. But as I stated earlier, most of the scientists involved in this stuff came here from Nazi Germany after World War II. We couldn't let the Russians get these guys. They had spent countless hours torturing and tormenting Jews in concentration camps, doing these unthinkable experiments, trying to learn the secrets of mind control. And we could not let the Russians get them, so we took them here. And what did we do? We put them to work to continue their programs. And we allowed them to continue these programs on American citizens. Part of what went into Monarch was something that had been learned in Nazi Germany. These low-frequency sound waves had an effect on people. And the Nazis, being such good followers of the occult, decided to tap into this energy. And when Hitler and other top Nazis gave their speeches in front of these large crowds, they had speakers pumping out these low-frequency sound waves along with the speech. And the people became just enthralled with no matter what sick, twisted, sadistic, disgusting thing that Hitler was yelping about. So a lot of the idea behind this low-frequency sound wave went into both MKUltra and Monarch, but more specifically Monarch. If you research MKUltra, you will find some of the most graphically disturbing accounts of abuse and torture of American citizens, specifically children, that you just will not believe the things that were done to these kids. And it was done to fracture their psyche, to split their brains into multiple personalities. And a good deal of this was being done through satanic sexual rituals, not unlike those that Crowley was partaking in. These kids were raped, brutalized. They were forced to endure all kinds of things that caused them to have this personality shift where their normal self could not accept what was happening, so they created an alternate self that could endure this stuff and partake in it. And by opening that doorway into their brain, they had a Manchurian Candidate type scenario where they could be programmed to go out and do all kinds of things. And this was done under the guise of we needed spies, and they could go around the world, and if they were caught, they could pass lie detector tests because they had a dual role. And if they were brought before the lie detector test, they could snap into this other personality and they would have no idea what they were even doing there. And clearly, they would pass the test. Likewise, they could be assassins, they could be anything. But I believe that was not the case at all. It really seems much more likely that these twisted powers working within the CIA, specifically the Nazis that came over here, wanted to do research into how to control people's thoughts. And I'm not talking about just one or two people. I'm talking about on a grand scale. And as I said before, this extra folder on the hard drive of their brain, this alternate personality, this person that doesn't really exist but at the same time does, opens them up for demonic possession. And a lot of these people were taken from military families. They were taken from occult-based families. They were taken from groups where the handlers knew that these kids were not protected by Jesus Christ. And it seems ever so likely that this was done specifically for that reason, because they wanted to attach demons to them. This technology that they were embracing and growing and learning wasn't just, oh yeah, you can plug this in and you're going to get some music out of it. This was demonic in nature. This was twisted, twisted demonology. And that's all there is to it. And these people were, you had men raping young boys over and over and over again. I mean, this is something that's not unlike what you see in the Catholic Church. And And if you care to look into the Catholic Church, you will find people from within the church itself that openly come out and declare that the Catholic Church serves Satan. An example of this would be Dr. or Father Malachi Martin. He was trained in theology at Louvain. He received doctorates in the Semitic languages, archaeology, and Oriental history. He then studied at Oxford and at Hebrew University in Jerusalem. From 1958 to 1964, he served the Holy See at the Vatican in Rome. Here he was a close associate of the renowned Jesuit Cardinal Augustine B. and His Holiness Pope John the 23rd. Then something happened, and in 1964 he asked to be released from his vows, and Pope Paul the 6th released him from his vows of poverty and obedience in the Jesuit order, but confirmed his vow of celibacy. Now this guy is probably as devout a Catholic as they come. He was involved in exorcisms. This was a really high-ranking Jesuit Catholic guy. And he went on to write some books. So now I'm going to quote from some of these books for you. Most frighteningly, for Pope John Paul II, he had come up against the irremovable presence of a malign strength in his own Vatican and in certain bishops' chanceries. It was what knowledgeable churchmen called the superforce. Rumors, always difficult to verify, tied its installation to the beginning of Pope Paul VI's reign in 1963. Instead, Paul had alluded somberly to the smoke of Satan, which has entered the sanctuary, an oblique reference to an enthronement ceremony by Satanists in the Vatican. Besides, the incidence of satanic pedophilia, rites and practices, was already documented among certain bishops and priests as widely dispersed as Turin in Italy and South Carolina in the United States. The cultic acts of satanic pedophilia are considered by professionals to be the culmination of the fallen archangel's rites. Then we have another fictional account of the same stuff called Windswept House, a Vatican Novel, 1996. In this story, he vividly described a diabolical ceremony called the enthronement of the fallen archangel Lucifer, supposedly held in St. Paul's Chapel within the Vatican, but linked with concurrent satanic rites here in the U.S. on June 29, 1963, barely a week after the election of Paul VI. In this novel, before he dies, a pope leaves a secret account of the situation on his desk for the next occupant of the throne of Peter. According to the New American, Martin confirmed that the ceremony did indeed occur, as he had described. "Oh yes, it is very true, very much so," the magazine reported, he said, "but the only way I could put that down into print is in novelistic form." He goes on, "Suddenly it became unarguable that now, during this papacy, the Roman Catholic organization called a permanent presence of clerics who worshipped Satan and liked it, of bishops and priests who sodomized boys and each other, of nuns who performed the black rites of Wicca and who lived in lesbian relationships, every day, including Sundays and holy days, acts of heresy and blasphemy and outrage and indifference were committed and permitted at holy altars by men who had been called to be priests. Sacrilegious actions and rites were not only performed at Christ's altars, but at the convenience, or at least the tacit permission, of certain cardinals, archbishops, and bishops. In total number, they were a minority, anything from 1 to 10% of church personnel. But of that minority, many occupied astoundingly high positions or rank. The facts that brought the Pope to a new level of suffering were mainly two: the systematic organizational links, the network, in other words, that had been established between certain clerical homosexual groups and satanic covens, and the inordinate power and influence over that network." So I hope you're getting that. What this guy is saying, whether or not, you know, you want to trust a Jesuit is up to you. But what he said was that by taking part in these homosexual acts, the raping of little boys by priests, was following an initiation, following the rites of the fallen angels, which would play into why Aleister Crowley took it upon himself to have male sex partners, which is why MK Ultra which I will explain to you. The MK Ultra and Monarch programs were tied in specifically with satanic covens. This is all about Satanism. This is all about messing with people's minds and opening them up to demonic possession. Meanwhile, those inflicting this disgusting, torturous acts upon these kids, they're performing the rites of fallen angels. They're doing it because this is what their religion dictates. They're not Catholic. They're not Christian. They're Satanists. So now, on to the Army. On to MKUltra again. U.S. Army Lieutenant Colonel Michael Aquino was involved in MKUltra. All right, I'm going to read to you about him. This came from a court hearing in 1999. On February 5th, 1999, in the U.S. District Court of Lincoln, Nebraska. All right? Well, then there was a man by the name of Michael Aquino. He was in the military. He had top Pentagon clearances. He was a pedophile. He was a Satanist. He's founded the Temple of Set. And he was a close friend of Anton LaVey. The two of them were very active in ritualistic sexual abuse. And they deferred funding from this government program, MKUltra, to use in this experimentation on children. When they deliberately split off the personalities of these children into multiples, so that when they're questioned or put under oath or questioned under lie detector, that unless the operator knows how to handle questioning a multiple personality disorder, they turn up with no evidence. She continues. They use these kids to sexually compromise politicians or anyone else they wish to have control of. This sounds so far out and so bizarre, I had trouble accepting it in the beginning myself, until I was presented with the data. We have the proof in black and white. Now, this was Noreen Ghosh speaking. And she was there because her 12-year-old son was grabbed off the street and enrolled in the program. Under questioning from DeCamp, Ghosh replied, I know that Michael Aquino has been in Iowa. I know that Michael Aquino has been to Ufoot Air Force Base. I know that he has had contact with many of these children. Paul Bonacci, who was simultaneously a victim and a member of the nationwide pedophile crime syndicate, has subsequently identified Aquino as the man who ordered the kidnapping of Johnny Ghosh. In his February 5th testimony, Bonacci referred to the mastermind of the Ghosh abduction as the Colonel. So now we're going to get into Mr. Aquino. Throughout much of the 1980s, Aquino was at the center of controversy involving the Pentagon's acquiescence to outright satanic practices inside the military services. Aquino was also a prime suspect in a series of pedophile scandals involving the sexual abuse of hundreds of children, including the children of military personnel serving at the Presidio U.S. Army Station in the San Francisco Bay Area. Furthermore, even as Aquino was being investigated by Army Criminal Investigation Division officers for involvement in the pedophile cases, he was retaining highest-level security clearances and was involved in pioneering work in military psychology operations. On August 18, 1987, San Francisco police raided Aquino's Russian Hill home, which he shared with his wife, Lilith. The raid was in response to allegations that the house had been the scene of a brutal rape of a 4-year-old girl. The principal suspect in the rape, a Baptist minister named Gary Hambright, was indicted in September of 1987 on charges that he committed lewd acts with 6 boys and 4 girls, ranging in age from 3 to 7 years, during September to October 1986. At the time of the alleged sex crimes, Hambright was employed at a child care center on the U.S. Army base at Presidio. At the time of Hambright's indictment, the San Francisco police charged that he was involved in at least 58 separate incidents of child sexual abuse. According to an article in the October 30, 1987 San Francisco Examiner, one of the victims had identified Aquino and his wife as participants in the child rape. According to the victim, the Aquinos had filmed scenes of the child being fondled by Hambright in a bathtub. The child's description of the house, which was also the headquarters of Aquino's Satanic Temple of Set, was so detailed that police were able to obtain a search warrant. During the raid, they confiscated 38 videotapes, photo negatives, and other evidence that the home had been a hub of a pedophile ring operating in and around U.S. military bases. Aquino and his wife were never indicted in the incident. When the San Francisco Chronicle contacted Army officials at the Presidio to find out if Aquino's security clearance had been lifted as a result of the pedophile investigations, the reporters were referred to the Pentagon, where Army spokesman Major Greg Rixon told them, "The question is whether he is trustworthy or can do the job. There is nothing that would indicate in this case that there's been any problem we should be concerned about." Indeed, the Pentagon had already given its de facto blessing to Aquino's long-standing public association with the Church of Satan and his own successor, Church, the Temple of Set. This despite the fact that Aquino's satanic activities involved overt support for neo-Nazi movements in the United States and Europe. So I know I'm going off on this, and I'm really, you know, kind of getting almost to the point of being off topic, but this is very, very important stuff. And you see, you've got a link between this New Age movement, between the occult and outright Satanism, between the Vatican, between the U.S. government, and it just gets worse and worse and worse as you go. So I'm going to read you one more thing about Aquino. And this is from a report that came out in 1990. What I'm reading you is reprinted from the Crystal Tablet of Set, and this was January 1st, 1990. And excuse me for not being able to pronounce the German words, but that's not my thing. In the Walhalla, or Hall of the Dead, at Castle Wellsburg, the subterranean Sanctum Sanctorum of the German castle, which Heinrich Himmler had reconstructed for his own workings in the black art, Michael A. Aquino, High Priest of Set, conducted a working on October 19th. I think this was 1983. It doesn't take much investigating to find out exactly what the working was. He conjured up what he believed to be the spirit of Heinrich Himmler. I know this is a lot of information to take in, and I apologize for that. But in order for me to encompass all of this stuff into one cohesive whole, I really had no choice, and I really need to explain all this to you guys, because, you know, a lot of people out there don't know any about this stuff. And you can very easily Google any of this and look it up for yourself. So we've talked mostly about MKUltra. Let me just touch on Monarch for a minute or two. Monarch dealt mainly with mind control through technology, and you were dealing with chip implants and things that we've heard rumored forever, but these were always just the signs of people being lunatics or madmen. You know, oh, there's a chip in my tooth, they put a chip in my head, all this stuff. Well, they actually were doing this. They were doing this in the 40s, in the 50s, in the 60s, these things started showing up on x-rays. And there was a man named Dr. Jose Delgado, a neurophysiologist at Yale University. He was interested in electronic stimulation of the brain. By implanting a small probe into the brain, Delgado discovered that he could wield enormous power over his subject using a device he called the Stimoceiver, which operated by FM radio waves. He was able to electronically orchestrate a wide range of human emotions. These included rage, lust, and fatigue. Now, those of you familiar with conspiracy stuff, what other group of people out there claim to have implants in them? Yes, UFO abductees often find that they've been implanted with something. Something that seems like it's from out of this world. When they're removed, these things don't look like they're earthly. But the overlap here is remarkable. You start to see all of the pieces coming into focus. You start to see all of the demonic connections between these people, the governments, the religions, the aliens, the UFOs, the low frequencies. And that's where I'm going to go next. The low, low, extremely low frequencies. We'll start off here talking about yet another government project. This project was known as Project Stargate. So Stargate was a remote viewing program. And what they did is they hired a bunch of clairvoyants, whether or not these were military kids that were abused, I have no idea, whether they were just quote-unquote psychics they grabbed off the street and offered jobs, I really don't know. But they hired these people, they brought them in, they worked for the military, and their job was to astrally project. And if you don't know what astral projection is, it's more or less splitting off your spirit or your conscience or your consciousness and sending it off to God only knows where to try to remotely view different places, different things, different times, etc., etc. So the government's plan here was supposedly to use these people to spy on the Russians, to check out what's going on Mars, you know, all this different stuff. And you can look this up. This is pretty common. This is more common knowledge probably than even MKUltra. It's, again, sorcery, New Age stuff. You know, these people want to be on a spirit plane instead of staying in their bodies where they belong. I mean, yeah, talk about opening yourself up to demonic possession. Hey, you know what? I'm going to just send my spirit off and leave my body behind and go look around and see what I can find. And there's no guarantee that these people, when they come back from their astral projection, are even the same people. You know, you could just have some demon imitating them. I mean, this is just crazy stuff. And there's nothing that says that these people aren't possessed, that demons don't jump into their bodies when they're not there. I mean, this is just idiocy, just blatant stupidity and the pride of man, just always, always, always having to be something other than ordinary. And it always, always goes back to the garden. It goes even back further than that. It goes to Satan falling because he wanted to be something more than he was, and offering Eve the chance to be something more than she was, and it just rolls from there. And this is important because these people are having out-of-body experiences. Okay, they're leaving their bodies. Where they go, I couldn't tell you. But they are no longer in control. They're incapacitated. Their bodies are on their own, left to fend for themselves. Now, I bring this up specifically because of a report I found. This is on Uri Geller's website. It's the actual address is www.uri-geller.com/houck2.htm. Mental Access Window by Jack Hook. What if the ability to do remote viewing and other high-performance mental techniques could be induced with high-tech means? There is some evidence that there is a mental access window, MAW, when the predominant frequency of an individual's electroencephalogram, EEG, is 7.81 to 7.83 Hertz. This is the same frequency range in which slight oscillations in the Earth's magnetic field occur, known as Schumann resonance. Interestingly, this frequency also corresponds to REM sleep and hypnagogic imagery. Hook first learned of the idea from Dr. Bob Beck when he purchased a simple EEG biofeedback unit from Beck. The unit provides auditory feedback from the brain activity of the user. Beck suggested that they make a recording of an input signal of exactly 7.81 Hz. Hook listened to the EEG unit attached to his head in one ear while simultaneously listening to the 7.81 Hz recording in the other ear. After a few minutes of relaxing, the two sounds became very similar, and then a full-blown out-of-body experience. Of the 45 people who have tried this experiment, approximately one-half have reported either a full-blown or partial out-of-body experience. I apologize very much for the technical aspects of this and the hertz and all that stuff. I tried very hard to ignore it, but, you know, at some point you kind of have to face it. This 7.81 to 7.83 hertz is extremely low. It's what's known as ELF energy, extremely low frequency. and that will come up again in a moment. The Schumann resonance is just the frequency at which the Earth resonates. There are changes in the magnetic field occur at this frequency, and that just happens to be the frequency that, if it's modulating in your head properly, can knock you right out of your body. Your brain works on different frequencies, like I said before, and apparently this frequency is similar, if not the same, as the frequency your brain is functioning on during REM sleep. So I guess if you're sleeping, you really don't want to get zapped by anything emitting this frequency. So apparently, there's this thing called HARP. And if you don't know what HARP is, you got to look this up, because this is really interesting stuff. It's in Alaska. It's a series of high-powered antennas that shoot a beam up into the ionosphere. And this energy is super high-frequency energy. And it can be used for anything from missile defense to manipulating the weather. And what happens is this shoots up and the energy transforms. It bounces back. And what comes back is a super low ELF frequency. And they can use this to penetrate deep into the earth to try to find oil. They can see, you know, they test to see what reflects in what way. And they use radar to pick up these frequencies that bounce back from within the earth. And they reveal where there are oil deposits and different things that can be mined, natural gas, whatever the case. But that's one case of a massive ELF beam being zapped down onto the planet by your government. And your government knows that they can manipulate your brain with these ELF waves. In 1962, the U.S. State Department discovered Russian microwaves beamed at a U.S. embassy in Moscow to learn why the CIA formed Project Pandora, a secret program in the Advanced Research Projects, ARPA, to explore concepts for EM weaponry. ARPA interviewed leading researchers on microwave effects on the brain and behavior and funded several labs to study low-level EM effects. So I'm going to read to you now from an article called MeLab Operations by James Bartley. So I came across this information just now. I was researching a little bit more into the out-of-body experiences, and I came across this article. Now, Bartley talks about the CIA. He talks about the MKUltra programs. He talks about Monarch. He talks about the low-frequency stuff, and he talks about aliens, and he claims this stuff is alien technology. So let me read this to you. It is a documented fact that the CIA and other intelligence agencies have utilized electromagnetic frequencies upon unwitting and unwilling subjects in mind control projects. Specific electromagnetic frequencies directed upon human beings can bring about certain predictable results. These predictable results run the gamut from nervous anxiety, the extremes of emotions, unconsciousness, hallucinations, nausea, and numerous other reactions. These predictable neurological and physiological responses are the desired outcome and form the basis for so-called non-lethal weapons, especially those described as active denial weapons. Active denial weapons are electromagnetic in nature and are designed to create extreme discomfort within individually targeted people if they stray into areas deemed off-limits. These weapons are also effective for crowd dispersal. The bottom line is that out-of-body experiences can be externally triggered by utilizing certain electromagnetic frequencies upon a human being. Aliens frequently use this technology upon abductees during certain phases of the alien's long-term involvement with a given abductee. And if you look into these alien abductions, what you'll find is case after case after case of these people saying they were taken aboard a ship and the aliens talked to them telepathically and they were able to talk back to the alien telepathically. Is it then possible that perhaps these people never really left their room? Maybe they just were knocked loose out of their body And these things grabbed them and took their spirit aboard a ship and was doing something to them? I don't know, but I think it's becoming more and more possible in my mind that that's what's actually happening. I want you to think back. I told you to remember Mr. Tandy, who claimed that he saw a gray thing in his room, just appeared in his lab, due to low-frequency sound. Of course, it was written off as a hallucination, and it went away when the low-frequency sound went away. In an April 1994 issue of Scientific American, it was stated that very low-frequency, VLF, acoustic beams can be used to suppress riots, control dissidents, demoralize or disable opposing forces, and enhance the performance of friendly special operations teams. VLF waves can be transmitted by GWEN, Ground Wave Emergency Network Towers, which are a series of 300 to 500 feet tall structures placed strategically every 200 miles in the U.S. A single tower would be sufficient to stop any local uprising that took place within its 200-mile radius. ELF towers can perform similarly. Well, ELF towers are even lower, and those are the waves I'm concerned about. In a 1982 Air Force review of biotechnology, it was said that ELF waves can be used for many purposes, including dealing with terrorist groups, crowd control, controlling breaches of security at military installations. ELF towers are being erected by the thousands across the world. The official purpose? Cell phone transmission. Mind control activist Ken Adachi states, "It is no coincidence that the frequency band chosen for cell phone use, 430 megahertz, matches the frequency which affects human brain waves." Now, what you're going to have here is a modulation, and it's going to be 430 megahertz modulating at 60 hertz. And that's how it gets you, because you need the higher frequency and then a corresponding ELF frequency. And as an example of this, I'm going to read to you from a patent, and this should explain a lot about subliminal stuff. This is U.S. patent number 5159703, patented October 27th, 1992. And you can go to Google and you can search patents. That's where I'm looking at this. This 5159703 patent is for a silent subliminal is for a silent subliminal presentation system. Abstract: a silent communication system in which non-oral carriers in the very low or very high audio frequency range, or in the adjacent ultrasonic frequency spectrum, are amplitude or frequency modulated with the desired intelligence and propagated acoustically or vibrationally for inducement into the brain, typically through use of loudspeakers, earphones, or transducers. The modulated carriers may be transmitted directly in real time, or may be conveniently recorded and stored on mechanical, magnetic, or optical media for delayed or repeated transmission to the listener. For broadcast application, the high audio frequency selected as the carrier frequency must meet two basic criteria. Number one, be high enough in the audio spectrum that its presence to the human ear is essentially unnoticed or undetectable. Number two, be low enough in the audio spectrum that it and its modulated content can produce a useful output power from home entertainment type cassette or reel-to-reel magnetic tape recorders. Alternately, the output of the system can be fed directly into an audio amplifier and its speaker earphone system, public address system, etc., etc. Alright, so this is a system of zapping you with a subliminal message, and they need a high frequency that you can't hear and a low frequency that you can't hear. And then the way your brain resonates, you'll take in the subliminal message. I'll give you another example of this. This is patent number 3060795, patented October 30th, 1962. Apparatus for producing visual stimulation. The present invention relates to an apparatus for producing visual stimulation at levels of awareness below the ability of an observer to report the stimulus verbally. That means the person doesn't perceive when the stimulation is actually coming in. If someone asked them, is it happening now? They could not verbally say, yes, it's happening now, or no, it's not happening now, because they're not sure. More particularly, the present invention relates to an apparatus for imparting useful information to an observer by subconscious stimulation and subsequently resulting in conscious, purposive behavior of said observer. So it just goes on to talk about how this is going to happen without the person knowing that it's happening. And they list possible uses for this device. Medicine, psychiatry, and psychology. Education. Advertising and marketing. Propaganda and psychological warfare. Conditioning civilian and military personnel. Enemy aliens. Prisoners of war. Or opposing forces. Or civilian population. And to counter brainwashing. And enhancement of motion pictures. So they just slipped that number 4 in there. It's like, we can help with psychiatry. This can be used as a learning tool. Civilian population control. And the enhancement of motion pictures. This is scary stuff. Developed all the way back in 1962. When our government was very active in partaking in brainwashing and learning how to control people's minds. This is something that just coincidentally happened to be patented right around the same time. If you look into this, a lot of this was developed by us and a lot by the Russians. And at some point, we made an exchange with the Russians. It's important to realize they're as involved as we are. And I think that's because they grabbed some of these Nazi scientists and we grabbed some. And we both met up at one common point. The 1975 issue of the Soviet publication International Life, discussing electronic mind control developments, stated that atmospheric electricity can be used to suppress the mental activity of large groups of people. The Soviet journal said that a sonic generator tuned to an infrasound below the hearing level frequency could create feelings of depression, fear, panic, terror, and despair. I don't know. A lot of those things go right along with the demonic possession. In 1977, the U.S. Defense Intelligence Agency, DIA, declassified a report describing how vast advances in Soviet psychotronic technology can create the ultimate Big Brother society by using electronic mind control against populations to implant ideas and thoughts into the heads of unsuspecting victims, sounds, and even possibly words, which appear to be originating intracranially within one's own head, can be induced by signal modification at very low average power densities, VLF and ELF. So after having spent all weekend digging through this stuff, reading through this stuff, I believe that there are people in the government that believe, yes, this stuff is going to be used for crowd control or to stop terrorists or whatever. But the people behind the scenes, the people developing the technology, the hands-on guys, are looking at something far more sinister than that. I outright believe that these satanically inspired scientists and military personnel and government employees, whatever you want to call them, are looking to use this low-frequency energy to alter your thinking, to open a door for demonic possession in all of us, looking for a way to harness that low-frequency energy, the same low-frequency energy that is associated with UFO manifestation and with spirits manifesting themselves. I believe these people are trying to open a portal that will allow these demons access to our world and to possessing whoever is not protected by the full armor of God. And I'll give you a few more examples, a few more quotes and whatnot before I go, but this is basically what my hypothesis is. Yes, this is spiritual warfare of the highest degree. And you always have to remember that you are not that suit of flesh and blood that you're wearing. That's you to a degree, but the real you, The essence of you is your spirit. It's your soul. And yeah, these things would love to kill you. These things would love to torture you, etc., etc. But they want your eternal damnation. They want their time, their reign here on earth, so that they can just wreak havoc on everyone and destroy God's creation. That's what Satan wants. Satan wants his time as the master of everything, sitting there on the throne, on what basically would be the throne of Jesus in the temple in Jerusalem. That's what he wants. And as science became the new religion, people have lost sight of God. People have lost sight of the fact that they are spiritual beings. And not only are they open to eternal damnation, but they're open to demonic attack and demonic possession. We're not little gods. We don't belong shooting our spirits off into astral planes. You look at these sick, twisted people, these Satanists, outright Satanists, going around and raping little boys and little girls and trying to give them multiple personalities. I mean, this is absolutely the most insane stuff that you could ever come across. And when you look at the connections, I mean, you don't hear about this. When you see NASA, you see spaceships, you don't attribute the rocket fuel and the ability for us to go into space as being something that was created by an outright Satanist, by someone that absolutely despised Christianity with all of his being. To most of us, that's an absolutely bizarre concept in itself, but it's absolutely true, and you can find that information right on NASA's website. The fact that Nazi scientists were brought to America after World War II. These despicable people that did the most horrendous things that you could ever do to another human being. We gave them not only freedom, but we gave them jobs. And we embraced what they were doing. So I ask that you reserve judgment on what I've just explained to you and laid out until you hear the rest of this presentation. Ron Patton writes, Project Monarch could be best described as a form of structured disassociation and occultic integration. In order to compartmentalize the mind into multiple personalities with a systematic framework, during this process, a satanic ritual, usually including Kabbalistic mysticism, is performed with the purpose of attaching a particular demon or group of demons to the corresponding altars. Of course, most skeptics would view this as simply a means to enhance trauma within the victim, negating any irrational belief that demonic possession actually occurs. And hey, I believe demonic possession actually occurs, so I really don't find this all that hard to believe. So the guy Ken Adachi, that I mentioned before as being anti-mind control, states, as of 1997, a high-level former programmer said she saw documents that indicated there were at least 2 million people in the USA who were programmed under MKUltra or Monarch programming. Her information does not include 10 million young people who were programmed under the earlier phase of the Montauk Boys style of electronic mind control programming. The Montauk programming takes less than a week for a full-blown installation program and takes less than 30 minutes for a typical tune-up or to add new programming. You no longer have to program one person at a time. The electronic method can insert the programming information directly into the subconscious mind for an entire room full of programming victims. The newer electronic method of mind control will work equally well on boys or girls, whereby earlier phases of the Montauk programming were trauma-based and would only work properly for young boys. Thus, it acquired the name Montauk Boys. Do you understand what that means? If it's true, that means that this whole torture and ritual sadism thing that splits the personality is no longer needed. This can be done electronically. And this mentions information on the Montauk Boys from 1999. How many cell towers did we have in 1999? Not nearly the amount we have now. And if they're zapping this stuff out there, and we have people that happen to be sensitive to whatever frequency they're using, it's very possible that they have found a way to do this across the air, through the airwaves. When you're reading scientific data about experiments and things being done to try to make voices pop up in your head, and different sounds and thoughts, so that you think that they've come from your own brain, you really have to wonder what exactly the full extent of what they're doing with these programs is. Then you have other reports that talk about the sinking of these frequencies to the resonant sound and frequencies of the earth, and how that can knock you and your consciousness right out of your body into an out-of-body experience. And this is why we need protection. We need protection from God. This is something we need to be praying about for ourselves and praying about for our fellow Christians and for all of our loved ones, because we don't know. We don't know the extent of this. And I'm going to read this to you now. The programmers are very much into demonology. Before therapists close their minds to this subject, because these people, when they have these split personalities, they go to therapy for years and years and years, and they try to merge them all back into one so that they can get rid of this stuff. But before therapists close their minds to this subject, the authors would like to point out that they personally know of cases where monarch slaves whose Christian personalities and other alters didn't believe in demonology and were talked into participating in real deliverance. And the slaves discovered, much to their surprise, that through true deliverance, they had done what they had unsuccessfully tried to do for years with their therapists. And this was done in a matter of days. They were able to get rid of these things within days. I mean, this is demon possession. These multiple personalities are not just little splits and little rifts. It's not just someone that's a little confused. Maybe in some cases someone can be chemically unbalanced and knocked into that. But in these cases, with this desired result, this is just sticking a demon in someone. This is cracking them, opening a little schism, and shoving a demon into them. And that, as Chris said in the Nowhere to Run podcast, can be alleviated through prayer. This is a battle of authority. This is a battle of dominion. This is spiritual warfare. And I found a piece of information that I was discussing earlier, which is Tom Horn. And this is from an interview. It's on his site, Raiders News Update. Or it's Raiders News Network now, but the old domain was Raiders News Update. And apparently this is still on there. He's talking about his sister. A few nights later, and I still remember this vividly, I was shook from bed by the sound of my sister screaming. Horrible, terrifying screaming. Everybody in the house jumped up out of bed and ran into her room. She was sitting up in bed, and the look on her face was unlike anything I've ever seen since. Mom stayed with her that night, put a Bible under her pillow, anointing clothes on her, and prayed with her. Sometime later, Mom told me that my sister had woke up that night and saw small, bulbous-headed gray men standing around her bed. And the interviewer asks, "You said in one interview that your mother's prayers made a difference in keeping the small men away." He replies, "They certainly appear to. I draw this conclusion because over the next 40 years, the phenomenon happened over and over, and whenever prayer was made, the event would stop for a while." Now, I've got audio of similar interviews with Tom, and if anyone's interested, email me, let me know, and I'll throw them up on FaithSpeak so you can listen to them. But this is really fascinating stuff, because you've got an evangelist here. This guy was involved in an awful lot of very high profile Christian cable networks and movies and all kinds of stuff. I've listened to him countless times. He used to be on the Steve Quayle Q-Files show. He's been all over the place on different podcasts and different radio shows and stuff. He's just such an awesome, abundant resource of all kinds of knowledge, everything from UFOs and the Nephilim to psychotronic warfare and spiritual warfare, and just a great guy, very entertaining. So I highly suggest searching out some of his stuff, and he wrote a fiction book called The Aramond Gate. Awesome book. So, you know, if you want to check him out, that's how you find him. RaidersNewsNetwork.com. But remember, with these UFO sightings, there is often the super low frequency hum. All right? Now, another occurrence of this super low frequency stuff is with EVP recordings. And I've mentioned them before. I don't like to get too much into them. I heard them on the radio once and it really upset me, and I wish I never heard them. These EVP recordings are electronic recordings of the electronic voice phenomena. It's basically people capturing demonic voices, often portrayed as children, on audio cassettes. So I'm on a website now called The New Journey Ghost Research NJGR Low Frequency Microphones. So this guy goes out and he tries to gather EVP recordings of these spirits. And in order to do so, he needs low frequency microphones. So let me read to you a little bit of this. I began utilizing a spectrum analyzer when reviewing my data. What I found made me even more curious. About 99% of all EVPs occurred within the 20 Hz to 40 Hz areas. After thoroughly testing this theory, I began developing high-powered, low-frequency microphones. And he goes on. He went through a bunch of prototypes, still refining. The optimum is to use the lowest frequency microphone heads available, usually the 20 Hz to 20 kHz. This is the lowest you can find. The DAT he uses records as low as 2 Hz. For the human voice, these extremely low frequency microphones sound horrible. But yet, we are gathering data which is far below the level of human hearing, which is regularly in the area of 50 Hz. My friends, if you want to increase the amount of EVPs you gather, start focusing upon the frequency level of your external microphone. With standard equipment, the lowest you might capture is 20 Hz. In the future, I may make plans for the low-frequency microphone available to the public. So you have to get really, really low in the frequency spectrum in order to grab these things. And like I said before, Vic Tandy, low frequency, came across what he thought was a hallucination. It was a gray spirit thing, demon, whatever you want to call it. He writes it off as a hallucination. It didn't speak to him, it didn't say anything, and if it did, I doubt he would have had a tape recorder running anyway. So I talked about HARP. I talked about the beaming of the high frequency stuff into the ionosphere and the bounce back of the low ELF waves. Talked about the cell towers and how they're emitting this ELF frequency band stuff. What I didn't touch upon is sleep paralysis. Now, sleep paralysis, and pretty much the only person I've told this before was Chris, sleep paralysis is something that I've had to deal with in my life. More or less, sleep paralysis is something that you wake up to, and you wake up, and it's like you're suddenly awake and there is something there. There are many cases where the thing, the entity standing there, looks to people like a gray alien. In my case, any time that it's ever happened, it's been an old, nasty woman. And the last time that I had this happen to me, it was some kind of a demonic-looking version of my dead grandmother. And this was maybe a month and a half ago. So I'd emailed Chris about this, and he told me instantly you have to rebuke it. You know, you need the power of Jesus to get rid of these things. And it didn't jog in my memory because it's very traumatic. If you haven't experienced it, it's just very traumatic. That's exactly what I did. I was just laying there. I couldn't move. And this thing is walking towards me. And I'm getting frustrated and I'm scared out of my mind. And the only thing, the instinctive reaction inside of me was just to start praying. And as soon as that happened, the thing was gone and I was fine. It kind of happens where you begin to be able to move again. You feel like your leg move or your arm move because you're trying to flail around and nothing's happening. And so you kind of come out of it in that you're moving. And when you feel your body begin to move again, this thing just is gone. And that's what happened. And thinking about it, anytime that this has happened, and it's probably happened to me maybe 10 times that I can think of off the top of my head throughout my life. I mean, not like in a month or something, but probably about 10 times it's happened. And every time I'm sure that I got rid of it the same way. It's just that, you're saved by the blood of Jesus and you're his. And when you need to know what to do and you're in that moment of angst and of fear and you don't know what's going on, he's going to give you the prompt. Hey, you're mine, and all you got to do is reach out and ask for some help. And science writes this off as just being like a residual sleeping effect, where you're coming out of your sleep, you're almost trapped in REM or something, you're in the middle of a dream. And it's kind of silly. I mean, people typically have one of several visions, and it's an old lady, an old man, a gray alien. People aren't seeing Jesus. People aren't seeing dinosaurs. People aren't seeing, kites, rotten eggs. They're seeing these things coming at them. And if you've listened to Chris talk about this before, you know anything about it, then you know that this is something that permeates all cultures and goes back far in time. It's not something that's brand new. So I'm sure you're wondering why exactly it is that I'm getting into this with you. Well, there's an influx of this happening now. I mean, there's a massive amount of people that are experiencing this. So I'm looking at the results of a survey now, and this survey states that 25 to 30% of the general population has suffered some form of sleep paralysis, with 95% of those experiencing a perceived horrifying event. Now, all through time, there have existed these extreme low frequencies, these ELF frequencies. They've always existed. Like I said before, the shifts in the Earth's magnetic field cause these ELF frequencies to exist. And then there are different magnets that can do it, and volcanic eruptions, and all kinds of stuff. So it's not unlikely that people in the past have experienced this due to some natural cause. But unfortunately, now the world is being bombarded with these ELF frequencies, and we really don't know exactly what those frequencies are capable of doing, especially if they're sustained. So these extremely low frequencies are also called infrasound, or they're infrasonic. Man-made structures such as cars, buses, trains, motorcycles, and airplanes also produce infrasound, as does a wall current. In the United States, wall current is 60 cycles per second. That's 60 hertz per second. In Europe, it's 50. Do you have any idea how many appliances are emitting these ELF frequencies? I can't even begin to explain how many things I have plugged in my room. I have been obsessed with wire since I was about 12 years old, and my entire bedroom looks like a spaghetti factory. You know, when you're a little kid and you're in school and they show you that diagram of how your outlets shouldn't look, they hand it out or whatever, they pass it around, and it's just appliance after appliance, thing plugged in. It looks like an octopus, or trying to think of how they explain it, but spaghetti really comes to mind. I'm looking right now literally at a pile on the floor from just this one outlet. I've got four of those long boxes, and I can't think of what they're called, but they convert a single outlet into multiples. So you can plug in like 10 things into this strip. It's called a power strip. There it is. I knew I had it in my brain somewhere. Anyway, I've got like four of those in this one outlet. I've got two more coming from the top part of the outlet behind the computer. I've got my TV and the DVD player and the cable box and the Wii and all this, the printer, everything else hooked up. We have no idea how much energy we're generating, how very easily we could be opening some kind of a portal into a demonic realm by just carrying on our modern-day, technologically advanced lifestyles. And we look at everything as if it's just normal. This is all we've ever known. This is what we grew up with. If you went back in time 100 years, people would be mesmerized by our lifestyles. They would have no idea how to turn on a television. The concept of the Earth giving off an ELF frequency, let alone an electrical appliance, would be mind-boggling. The concept of zapping a beam that could implant a voice or something into someone's head is mind-boggling for us who live now, let alone for someone that lived then. But I want to go back. I want to go back to Bailey. I want to talk about Bailey again. I want to talk about Blavatsky again. Now, I want you to remember. Bailey, Alice Bailey, talked to this thing, this master, Dijwal Kul. And she wrote, "These methods of overshadowing will largely be the ones used by the great lord and his masters at the end of the century." These methods of overshadowing what exactly? Overshadowing God, overshadowing Christianity. Let me continue reading. "They are sending into incarnation in every country disciples who have the opportunity offered them to respond to the need of training men and women to recognize the higher psychism and the true inspiration and mediumship to do this scientifically." Our old world is gone. The old world is gone. Everything is science now. You can't get a glass of water without needing science. You can't. Nothing. There's no well to go to. You're going to get it from the sink. You're going to get it from the refrigerator. In 50 years' time, this is around 1915, remember. In 50 years' time, the need for true psychics and conscious mediums will be very great if the master's plans are to be carried through to fruition. These true psychics and mediums came around just a little after she said. They were astral projectors. There were people involved in these mind control programs right at the 50-year mark. People that are occultists, people that are into this divination and conjuring Pan in order to help oversee rocket launches. And this is not a coincidence. It's not a coincidence. These people permeated the upper echelon of our government. And not just our government, the Russian government, the British government, the German government. I mean, this is some really, you have to go back to the source. When you get a hold of the information, you go back and you look at what these people said. And they claim that they were channeling a master, some divine spirit. Now they're channeling a demon that told them exactly what the plan was. And they sowed the seeds, and eventually those seeds have grown into a monster. They've grown into this Antichrist system. Now, Blavatsky, we say and maintain that sound, for one thing, is a tremendous occult power, that it is a stupendous force when directed with occult knowledge. Sound may be produced of such a nature that the pyramid of Cheops would be raised in the air. Now, has anyone ever heard of Patrick Heron? Has anyone ever heard his theories about the Nephilim and the apocalypse? If you haven't, I suggest you go to the Nowhere to Run podcast and check him out. I've got lots of interviews with him on tape too, if you want to check him out. But he makes a great case for flying pyramids. And, you want an example of this? If you've ever seen Stargate, I don't watch the TV show, but I know in the movie there were flying pyramids. And yeah, I know that sounds absolutely crazy, right? This whole pyramid thing with the New World Order, we're told that it's just the hierarchy of everything and that everyone's compartmentalized and it's just the Illuminati at the top represented by the capstone. That's fine, but there's something far more occultish going on with these pyramids. Remember, that's where Crowley went on his honeymoon. He was contacted by something that claimed that it was Horus. You've got the dollar bill pyramid with the Eye of Horus right on it. So as I move towards closing this podcast out, I want to present to you some information about this pyramid, about the pyramids, all right? The most intense speculation has always stemmed from the dozens of occult groups who see the pyramids as a source of immense untapped power waiting to be released. In the late 1800s and early 1900s, occult organizations like the Golden Dawn, that was Crowley, used many of the trappings and imagery associated with ancient Egypt, from the hierarchy of priests to the modes of dress. Self-appointed magicians, for example, the notorious Great Beast Aleister Crowley, himself a former leader of Golden Dawn, styled his workings and ceremonies after the manner of Egyptians. In his biography, Crowley tells of spending a night meditating in the king's chamber of the Great Pyramid alone with his wife. During his meditation, he recounts how, after extinguishing all lights, they were still able to see clearly enough to read from a blue glow of spiritual energy radiating from the walls of the chamber. The glow faded as dawn broke. It is claims like this that helped develop a vigorous industry around ancient Egypt and in the pyramids in particular. I want to note here, too, that Napoleon spent a night in the pyramid, in the king's chamber, alone. And when he emerged the next morning, he would not talk to anyone about it and never talk to anyone about what happened inside of the pyramid that night. I do not wish in any way to diminish the knowledge, skills, and abilities of our forefathers, but even in modern terms, such a project is nigh on impossible, and over 3,000 years ago, it defies comprehension. There has to be a missing element. One current theory, championed by American engineer Tom Danley, postulates that the stones were floated into place using a technique he calls sonic levitation. Danley has studied this technology for years based on earlier pioneering work with infrasonics, low-frequency sound waves, carried out by French researcher Vladimir Garveau during the 1950s. In the case of Garveau, the use of infrasound was developed with military applications in mind. Various governments are still carrying out the infrasound projects covertly, and there is every reason to believe that they are used as part of crowd control techniques. Danley believes that an allied technology was employed by the ancient Egyptians to vibrate the stone blocks at a high frequency, thereby rendering them effectively weightless. Allegedly, there are contemporary hieroglyphs referencing a mysterious staff of Ra, indicating that it was used in some manner by a caste of priests who struck the stone blocks with the staff, making them weightless. It's reasonable to assume there must have been more than one such device to deal with the vast number of blocks involved. Danley took sound measurements within the Great Pyramid, also known as Cheops, using amplifiers and speakers in the so-called relieving chambers above the King's Chamber. After measuring the frequency generated, 16 Hz, extremely low frequency, which is below the range of human hearing, he found that it corresponded to the F-sharp chord. Based on this discovery, the purpose of the cavities above the King's Chambers, originally assumed to have been constructed to spread the structural stresses within the pyramid, may have had an entirely different function. This purpose, strange though it may seem, may have been to tune the structure to a specific frequency. The ancient Egyptians recognized this frequency as a harmonic of the planet. Danley also speculates that when the original limestone cladding was in place and the sides of the pyramid were smooth, the wind blowing over the entrance to the so-called aligning shafts would create a musical note, similar to that produced by blowing over the neck of a bottle. Yet another connection is evident with the witch doctors and shaman of the indigenous North American tribes who tune their ceremonial flutes to, yes, F sharp. Modern naval communications with submarine fleets use sophisticated extra-low frequency transmitters, 10 to 30 hertz. More worryingly, the previously mentioned 1950s researcher, Vladimir Garveau, discovered that low-frequency sound between 5 to 7 hertz could kill. The composer Wagner, a Nazi, wrote a musical score featuring a section designed to represent an earthquake at 16 hertz. This was before there was a device capable of reproducing the sound. The piece was performed in its entirety only recently, using a specially designed PA system to reproduce the low frequencies. The audience, of course, could not hear the notes. They were not intended to, but they could feel them. Is it possible that this knowledge was displayed in biblical descriptions of Joshua using sound to cause the destruction of Jericho's walls? Once again, we appear to be rediscovering technologies and techniques that were known to our ancestors. The article goes on. There's a guy named Boris Said, whose company Magic Eye Productions is interested in getting underneath the tunnels, or supposedly tunnels, that go from the Sphinx to the pyramid. He represents a group called R, and R represents the Edgar Cayce Society. And the Edgar Cayce Society wants to get underneath the Sphinx because they believe there are lost, hidden records beneath the Sphinx that will link ancient Egypt to the lost continent of Atlantis. Edgar Cayce was a clairvoyant, and he foresaw this, and he foresaw the reemergence of Atlantis, and so that's what they're looking for. The Stanford Research Institute, an American non-governmental organization, has a different agenda. Allegedly, they, with the funding of the CIA, are using the results of a U.S. government-sponsored psychic experiment in remote viewing to gain an insight into what's hidden. The involvement of the CIA and the Pentagon in searches and excavations on the plateau is curious, since it raises several important issues. What interest could an organization like the CIA have in the Giza complex? Is it possible that there is some basis to the Cayce prophecies and there are fundamental secrets affecting mankind hidden away within and below the bulk of the Great Pyramid? Now I'm going to go to another article written by Dr. Robert M. Schock, Ph.D. Now this article starts off with his visit to the Great Pyramid, and he's talking about going into the King's Chamber and the Queen's Chamber and all this stuff. Next, I crawled down hundreds of feet through the descending passage to the chaotic subterranean chamber. Carved in the bedrock underlying the Great Pyramid, this room looks truly chaotic. Huge chunks of rock emerge from the floor, and there's also a strange well or pit on one end. Many traditional Egyptologists consider the subterranean chamber unfinished or abandoned. But why an unfinished chamber in what is arguably the most precisely aligned and built structure in the entire world? I received a powerful, strange sensation in this chamber. Other people have picked up powerful energies here, as have inanimate machines. At the Princeton Engineering Anomalies Research Laboratory of Princeton University, scientists have been running credible experiments. They're using these machines that are random event generators, and I don't really know what that means. They pick up anomalous, non-random trends. I don't really know what that means, but I'll continue. Dr. Roger Nelson, an expert on the use of these REGs, carried an REG on a trip to Egypt in the 1990s and found many anomalies in the inner sanctums of various ancient temples. He also visited the Great Pyramid. Dr. Nelson found relatively little unusual activity in the king's or queen's chambers. But in the subterranean chamber, the machine became very excited. Some researchers believe the Great Pyramid was built as a Freemasonic or Rosicrucian temple. Perhaps the Rite of the Little Dead, during which the initiates spent 3 days in total darkness without food or water, experiencing altered states of consciousness, took place in the subterranean chamber. Dr. Nelson's startling REG results are compatible with his hypothesis, as well as the suggestion made by Robert Bouval, one I had independently been thinking about too. Perhaps the subterranean chamber and the natural rock mound in which it is found, a rock mound that is now covered over by and enclosed in the Great Pyramid, is much older than the Great Pyramid itself. Was it considered sacred for thousands of years before the Great Pyramid was actually built? And here's yet another piece from another article. The Great Pyramid, for example, is supposed to have been built by Khufu or Cheops because of the red-painted cartouches discovered in one of the five chambers above the King's Chamber by Howard Weiss in 1837. Some of them read, Khnum Khufu. Khnum, or the Divine Potter, protects me. This inscription, found in various other places in Egypt, could have been a spell of protection. Khnum later became known as Khnef, also called the Enlightener. So you've got an inscription inside this Great Pyramid, the Pyramid of Cheops, that relates back to a being known as the Enlightener. And I've been through this about 51 times now. The Enlightener, the Illumined One, the Lightbringer, the Lightbearer. These are all names for Lucifer. I'm going to read you one more quote, and it's going to rehash the same information dealing with what's underneath the Great Pyramid. Geologist Robert M. Schock has proposed the interesting theory that the rough-cut chamber below the Great Pyramid, the pit, is an earlier sacred site, and that the pyramid was deliberately built above it. This would explain its apparently unfinished state. Yet the only known passageway connecting to it from the superstructure of the pyramid, 200 feet of angled tunnel cut into natural rock, deviates only 1/4 inch from perfectly straight. This extreme precision is similar to that found in numerous instances in the Great Pyramid, and would argue that the pit, or at least the entrance to it, was built at the same time and was intentionally left unfinished, a more natural state perhaps for symbolic reasons. It is most curious that this spot was left this way, considering the near perfection of the remainder of the building. Now, I've heard for a long time there's something underneath the Great Pyramid, and I find it fascinating that there's a subterranean chamber below. And within that subterranean chamber, there's a quote-unquote pit. I'm going to read to you now from Revelation 9. Then the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star fallen from heaven to the earth. To him was given the key to the bottomless pit. And he opened the bottomless pit, and smoke arose out of the pit like the smoke of a great furnace, so that the sun and the air were darkened because of the smoke of the pit. And then out of the smoke locusts came upon the earth, and to them was given power, as the scorpions of the earth have power. They were commanded not to harm the grass of the earth, or any green thing, or any tree, but only those men who do not have the seal of God on their foreheads. And they were not given authority to kill them, but to torment them for 5 months. Their torment was like the torment of a scorpion when it strikes a man. In those days men will seek death and will not find it. They will desire to die, and death will flee from them. The shape of the locusts was like horses prepared for battle. On their heads were crowns of something like gold, and their faces were like the faces of men. They had hair like women's hair, and their teeth were like lions' teeth, and they had breastplates like breastplates of iron. And the sound of their wings was like the sound of chariots, with many horses running into battle. They had tails like scorpions, and there were stings in their tails. Their power was to hurt men 5 months. And they had, as king over them, the angel of the bottomless pit, whose name in Hebrew is Abaddon, but in Greek he has the name Apollyon. One woe is past. Behold, two more woes are coming after these things. Now here's where things get really strange, okay? And that's the only way that I can present this to you. This is just either a lot of strange coincidences, or this is something that makes an awful lot of sense. Remember the idea of the pyramid having smooth sides, making it like wind blowing across the top of a bottle, as if these smooth sides could cause the pyramid to basically sing out? What were they planning on doing to the pyramid back at the turn of the century as we passed into the year 2000? The Associated Press is reporting that to celebrate the turn of the millennium, the Egyptian government is planning to replace the missing capstone on the Great Pyramid at Giza with a new golden capstone, but only for one night. Zahi Hawass, the powerful and well-known caretaker of the Giza Plateau monuments, is also proposing that the Great Pyramid be closed to the public forever. Remember the picture of George H.W. Bush laying in bed with his little pyramid with his little golden capstone on it? What do you think this means? Call me crazy, but I don't think that this whole pyramid capstone thing is just all about symbolism and being about the Illuminati taking control of the people or any of the other descriptions that I've come across. I think there's something under that pyramid, trapped under that pyramid. Once you have a definitive link between Lucifer and that pyramid, which I believe having that name that translates to the enlightened is, that's a direct correlation between some kind of a spirit thing, God, as, you know, the Egyptians viewed these people, these kings were indwelt by their God, and you now have a link to Lucifer, and you find out that there's a pit underneath the pyramid, literally a pit. None of the other pyramids have those air shafts at the top that would be used to resonate sound. And the man's name, the guy that's in charge of the iniquities in all of Egypt, the guy that's in charge of the pyramids, name is Hawass. And that's strikingly similar to the name of the spirit, the pseudonym of Horus, that Aleister Crowley made contact with. Hawass. I mean, that's just weird, and I just came across that now, and that's just really strange. So I'm going to read to you a little bit more about sound. Ancient Egyptian literature testifies to the importance of sound at the time of the creation. In several versions of the creation myth, the creator god brings the cosmos into being by opening his mouth and pronouncing sacred words. And this, of course, is similar to the creation story in the Bible. Only the Bible is reality, and this is, you know, Satan's mythology. Moreover, in the pyramid texts, a prominent theme is the creator's emergence from the earth and ascent into the sky, accompanied by a great noise and commotion. The earth quakes. Isis and Nephthys emit wails of lament. The gods shout, the voice of Geb, the earth, resounds. The king speaks to the sky, he comes forth as the great word, with the gods on his lips, he ascends with a roar. In all these renderings of the creation myth, the emission of sound is implicit. So they're explaining this off as creation myth. In the creation myth, God comes out of the earth. Okay? It's not a creation myth. It's something becoming loose from within the earth. There's noise. There's great commotion. The gods shout. The voice of Geb, or the earth, resounds. Remember that earth frequency? That 7.61 or whatever it was frequency that can knock someone into an out-of-body experience. That's the Earth sounding. That's the frequency of the Earth. And that's what most of these depictions of the sound emanating, generated by the pyramid, would be. It would be at that Earth frequency. And it's this same frequency that I believe opens some kind of a portal for these things to come through. So what the heck, I'm going to read to you from Ezekiel 30. The word of the Lord came again unto me, saying, Son of man, prophesy and say, Thus saith the Lord God, How ye woe worth the day. For the day is near, even the day of the Lord is near, a cloudy day. It shall be the time of the heathen. And the sword shall come upon Egypt, and great pain shall be in Ethiopia, when the slain shall fall in Egypt. And they shall take away her multitude, and her foundation shall be broken down. Ethiopia and Libya and Lydia, and all the mingled people, and Chub, and the men of the land that is in league, shall fall with them by the sword. Mingled people, curious. Thus saith the Lord, They also that uphold Egypt shall fall, and the pride of her power shall come down. For the tower of Sinai shall they fall in it by the sword, saith the Lord God. And they shall be desolate in the midst of the countries that are desolate, and her cities shall be in the midst of the cities that are wasted. And they shall know that I am the Lord, when I have set a fire in Egypt, and when all her helpers shall be destroyed. In that day shall messengers go forth from me in ships to make the careless Ethiopians afraid, and great pain shall come upon them, as in the day of Egypt, for lo, it cometh. Thus saith the Lord God, I will also make the multitude of Egypt to cease by the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon. He and his people with him, the terrible of the nations, shall be brought to destroy the land, and they shall draw their swords against Egypt and fill the land with the slain. And I will make the rivers dry and sell the land into the hand of the wicked, and I will make the land waste and all that is therein by the hand of strangers. I, the Lord, have spoken it. Thus saith the Lord God, I will also destroy the idols, and I will cause their images to cease out of Noph, and there shall be no more a prince of the land of Egypt, and I will put a fear in the land of Egypt. No more a prince. We've seen princes over and over and over again in the Bible representing angels or demons. In Daniel 10:13, Daniel has an angel come to him. And the angel says, But the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 21 days. But lo, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, and I remained there with the kings of Persia. So there's a hierarchy of angels and demons and things. And this very much sounds to me like God is taking away this demon ruler of Egypt. And if you're still not sure, I'll continue reading. And I will make Pathros desolate, and will set fire in Zoan, and will execute judgment in No. I will pour my fury upon Sin, the strength of Egypt, and I will cut off the multitudes of No. And I will set fire in Egypt. Sin shall have great pain, and No shall be rent asunder, and Noph shall have distresses daily. And young men of Avon and of Pibeseth shall fall by the sword, and these cities shall go into captivity. At Tahapnes also the day shall be darkened, when I shall break there the yokes of Egypt, and the pomp of her strength shall cease in her. As for her, a cloud shall cover her, and her daughter shall go into captivity. Thus I will execute judgments in Egypt, and they shall know that I am the Lord. And then it came to pass in the 11th year, in the first month, in the 7th day of the month, that the word of the Lord came unto me, saying, Son of man, I have broken the arm of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and lo, it shall not be bound up to be healed, to put a roller to bind it, to make it strong to hold the sword. Therefore, thus saith the Lord God, Behold, I am against Pharaoh king of Egypt, and will break his arms, the strong, and that which was broken I will cause the sword to fall out of his hand. And I will scatter the Egyptians among the nations, and will disperse them through the countries. I will strengthen the arms of the king of Babylon, and will put my sword in his hand. I will break Pharaoh's arms, and he shall groan before him with the groanings of a deadly wounded man. But I will strengthen the arms of the king of Babylon, and the arms of Pharaoh shall fall down. And they shall know that I am the Lord, when I shall put my sword into the hand of the king of Babylon, and he shall stretch it upon the land of Egypt. And I will scatter the Egyptians among the nations and disperse them among the countries, and they shall know that I am the Lord. So that prince is not the Pharaoh. The Pharaoh is mentioned by name. Interestingly enough, he's mentioned in correlation to a deadly wounded man. We know who gets mortally wounded later on, and that would be Apollyon, Abaddon, Lucifer. You pick your name, the Antichrist. If you're not familiar with it, I suggest you look into the symbol of the solar disk, the winged solar disk, representing the fact that this thing supposedly flew. This was in correlation with sun worship, which again goes back to Lucifer. And this is what the Egyptian religion was all about, the indwelling of this god that was not only connected to the sun, but that was also connected to a flying disc. So I want to read to you again from this so-called creation myth. The gods shout. The voice of Geb, or the earth, resounds. The king speaks to the sky. He ascends with a roar. Now, I don't know what that sounds like to you, but that very much sounds like something blasting off. To me, anyway. So, I'm going to wrap up the podcast now. I want to just rehash a little bit of what my belief surrounding this all-encompassing conspiracy theory is. The overall theory, the overall idea, I believe, is a dual-purposed concept. The first part of the concept is to open you or me or your kids or your neighbors up to demonic possession. You've seen all of the New Agers, all of the occult workers. They all open themselves up to channeling, to tapping into this power, this demonic power. They use these entities to bring forth the New World Order. Then we saw this ritual sexual abuse spread from the occultist to the occultist in Nazi Germany, to the CIA, to other groups like the CIA in other governments in Russia. We saw clairvoyance embraced, just as we were told by Bailey that we would if the plan was going in accordance to the masters. This was remote viewing. These satanic ritual sexual abuses. You see the church infiltrated, at least the Catholic Church and the Baptist Church, because there's a Baptist minister involved in this as well. You see how through abusing children, mind control technology was advanced. You see how we're bombarded with these low frequency waves that can be used to almost create a schizophrenic person, to add voices in their head, the same as you have this schism in these abused people with their multiple personalities. And just by chance, these same ultra low frequencies, extremely low frequencies, ELF frequencies, are found in correlation with the materialization of UFOs and the spirit world. And more often than not, the spirit world, these demons, are gray aliens. Then you've got the rise in the sleep paralysis. You've got these gray aliens manifesting themselves there, or this old hag thing manifesting itself there. You're not seeing bunny rabbits. People aren't seeing big fluffy marshmallows. They're seeing evil entities. The New Age is the New World Order. It's a spiritual age. As much as we've been duped into thinking all there is science, that's not the case. And the powers that be know it's not the case. They've got one over on you, and they've got one over on everyone you know. Because they look at this world like it's a spiritual world. And they can tap into these powers, and they can gain all this power, all this knowledge from these demons. And they don't want you to know these demons exist, because if you know, then you, as a good person, will find Christ. You'll know that, you know what, we are surrounded by good and evil. And I'm not going to choose evil. I'm going to choose good. So they hide this from you. And when the time comes, evil will be unveiled under the guise of good. And that is the ultimate goal. And in order for that evil to come forth, certain things have to be done. The same way that Madame Blavatsky had to be contacted. The same way that Alice Bailey had to be contacted and Aleister Crowley had to be contacted. There are always little pieces. There are big figureheads and there are little guys all around the world that are tapping into these powers or being tapped into by these powers. And without their influence, without their sway and the things that they can do in their lives to alter reality, really. I mean, that's all this is. We go through our daily lives and everything we do changes something else. So by tapping into these people, whatever little things that they do are helping to bring forth this satanic New World Order. And I happen to believe that just like Vic Tandy's spirit materialization, just like the UFO materialization with the low frequencies, just like the EVP recordings that use the ultra-low frequencies and require special microphones and recording devices that record extremely low frequencies, there's something with that pyramid that it's all over everything. It's all over everywhere. It is the symbol of the New World Order. And the fact that it resonates extremely low frequencies after being tested sonically, those are the sounds that it resonates with, the idea that there's a pit underneath it, with the idea that the New World Order wants to smooth the top of it. Just as a scientist could come forward and say, well, you know what? I bet when this thing was smooth, it made sound like someone blowing in a bottle from a combination of wind blowing through it and the rattle of the Earth's resonance. That extremely low 7.61 hertz frequency resonating through it. So upon reading all of this and going through all of this data, my new tack-on spin to this, and this is purely my idea. I think the rest of this stuff pretty much speaks for itself. I mean, the UFOs are the Nephilim. There's no doubt about that. And you're dealing with neo-Nephilim. And even the low-frequency waves, the elf waves, alter human DNA. So if by chance these things are actually trying to reproduce with human women again, as they did in Genesis 6, then it's very likely that this ELF transmission is doing something to our DNA, along with all of the other clone foods we're eating and vegetables that produce their own pesticides and everything else, that they're trying to alter our DNA to get it to a point where they can mingle their seed with us again. But my addendum to this entire thing is that I tend to now believe that that pyramid is not just a symbol of the structure, that the hierarchy of the structure of the New World Order. There's something far more sinister buried below that pyramid. And as always, I'm not telling you, you have to believe me. I'm not telling you, hey, you know what, I'm right and you're wrong. No, this is a lot of it is speculation, and that's all we can really do until things unfold, until we actually see what God's plan is and what Satan's plan is and how these things are actually going to unfold. All that we can do is take the information we can get our hands on, compare it to the Bible and try to formulate some kind of a cohesive unit. And a big part of the reason why I do this and several other people that I talk to do this is because we want you to be prepared for anything. You have to put on that full armor of God. You have to be prepared spiritually, and you have to be prepared physically. If it turns out that there's not an entity dwelling beneath the Great Pyramid, hey, no skin off my teeth, I really don't care. If it turns out that that report from Uri Geller's website talking about these frequencies being able to knock you into an out-of-body experience turn out to be incorrect, I really don't care. I'm not giving you this information because it's gospel. There's only one gospel. There's only one word of God. And that's your Bible. I'm giving you speculation, or what I hope is educated speculation, on this stuff. And I give it to you because I want you to be prepared for anything. If you never see a UFO in your lifetime, hey, that's great. If you never see a UFO and we live through the tribulation and there's just no UFOs, I don't care. But I've prepared you for it. If you happen to encounter this thing, or if at some point we have an invasion of aliens, at least you've been prepared and you know what you'll be dealing with. And that's why I do this. And that's why most of us are doing this. But whatever the case, you have to acknowledge that you are a spiritual being. You are not just your skin and bones. You're something far more valuable than that. And you have to remember you need to be prepared. You need to be protected, both physically and spiritually. You have to be reading the Word of God regularly. So I've rambled a ton, and this is the longest podcast I think I'll ever do in my life. But I wanted to answer these questions and try to formulate my own hypothesis off of a hypothesis, like a secondary. And I really, I wanted to talk about the sleep paralysis stuff. And, I just had a lot to get into here. And, I'll probably come back to this stuff in smaller increments at some point in the future and talk just about the specifics, because I really didn't get really too deep into anything. This is just more of an overview of things and how they correlate to one another. So that'll be something that I might look into in the future. For now, I want to thank all of you for listening. If you're still out there, thank you for putting up with me for this long. I want to thank Chris White for giving me the opportunity or the inspiration to get into this stuff and to really dig into it. I get lost in the news a lot, and I really lose sight of what I was originally doing when I began this podcast, which was, really dealing with this stuff. So it was nice to be able to talk about this. And like I said, I'm going to be putting the podcast reference material stuff up on faithspeak.net. That'll be on the left-hand side. There's a Salvation Revelation group. Just click that and you'll find the information for this podcast there. Whenever I get finished writing this paper thing, I'll put that up on salvationrevelation.com. That's probably going to take me another day or two, but that'll have this information and probably more in it. And I'm up to like 12 pages already. So, as I'm sure most of you can tell, my throat is shot. I can barely talk. It's now 11:22 a.m. I've been working on this since about 11 o'clock last night. So that would be, 12 hours for something I researched all weekend. Can't help it. Just when God throws you information, I came across stuff that I've been looking for specifically and couldn't find. And that happens sometime mid-podcast, and there's nothing you can do about it. You just have to go with it and try to get it in there. So thanks again, everybody, for listening. Please email me and let me know what you think. If you have any input, if you want to tell me I'm absolutely off my rocker, absolutely fine with me. I'm totally cool with it. You can contact me either at salvationrevelation.com. Just click the contact link, and that should bring up a box for you to fill out and send me an email. Or go to faithspeak.net. More often than not, I'm on there under Frank. And if you're looking for my picture, I've got a leather jacket on in the picture for now. If you can't find me that way, then just shoot an email on there to Salvation Revelation. And that'll get to me eventually whenever I get over to that account again. Anyway, thank you all for listening, and I hope to hear from all of you soon. I want you all to know that I am praying for you all often, constantly. And I ask you all to do the same for me. And, you know, it's important that we all stick together and we're all in this spiritual war together. And the more we pray, the more we pray for one another, the more protection we will be given. And that's what we are told to do in Ephesians 6:18, praying always with all prayer and supplication in the Spirit, and watching thereunto with all perseverance and supplication for all saints. And that's your final cog in your spiritual armor. And that's you and me needing one another, needing to be praying for one another. And with that, I will say goodbye. I hope to hear from you all soon. And God willing, I hope to have another podcast up sometime, either tonight or early tomorrow morning. So I hope to talk to you all again soon, and God bless.
This show is brought to you by TalkShoe.
Create your own internet talk show. Check it out at talkshoe.com.